Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two and a frigid Midwestern day. It is minus 30, minus 32, minus 28, all sorts of temperatures coming in from around the Midwest about how cold it is, and that doesn't even include the wind chill. It's crazy to be in studio this morning. I know even our main media center here, the KTS building, is shut down for most of the day, but we are here in studio chatting about the news topics of the day from a Christian standpoint, fixing our eyes on Jesus together as we do each morning on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault in studio. Great first hour talking with them a little bit about some of the challenges facing our families and our youth. And maybe one more thing that we can say about the end of last hour is another thing that we can do is simply pray. Prayer really matters in terms of affecting realities within God's kingdom. So stay on that journey with our kids, and glad you're joining us this morning. We also closed last hour with the doxology of Minnesota, which had a lot to do with the cold weather. And there is some very good news about this cold weather, and that is that forestry officials say that the extreme cold could help kill a damaging invasive species of bug. Officials say that the larva of the Herald ash borer will begin to die when temperatures drop to 20 below zero. The beetle eats tissues under the bark of ash trees, eventually killing them. And I'm sure many of you listening this morning have had the devastation of maybe forests around you as ash trees have had to come down being infected and affected by the ash borer. So maybe we could stay below minus 20 for another week or so and kill all of the ash borers in our country, and there would be good news. There would be hope in the midst of such difficulty, as there always is in God's beautiful kingdom. Well, up next, I'll be joined by my friends Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley, who are pastors of a local church, Church of the Open Door, here just outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And they are part of Next Generation of Pastoral Ministry, people that I really wanted to get their perspective on what they see in terms of the future of ministry as God's kingdom continues well beyond my life, well beyond any of our lives, that there's always hope that we see people continuing to follow Jesus into the future. So looking forward to the next hour with them, in which we'll talk about specific things happening and going on in the next generation and how we can continue to minister God's kingdom. So welcome back. This is hour two of Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, here at about 8 minutes past the top of the hour on the 30th of January in this frigid cold, enjoying the time with you as listeners. This morning, we see that out of Grand Forks, North Dakota, yesterday had a wind chill of minus 75 at one point. I can't even get my head around what that would feel like. I know many of us are not out and about today, and that is a really good thing. However, there are two people that managed to get out and about this morning, and they actually drove through the cold and the wind to join me in studio. They're good friends of mine that are in pastoral ministry. Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley are in pastoral ministry at Church of the Open Door, and they're part of a next generation movement of pastors that continue to minister the kingdom to God's people into the future. Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
Great to have you in studio. How fun is this to see you? You even kind of sang that perfectly together. Yeah. You're already in tune. There's a harmony here in the voices. And
feels good.
It does. So the car started this morning, Taylor. I know that you're picking up Katie along the way here, but everything worked out, huh?
Yeah, my roommates let me park in the garage. So
there you go.
I mean, it was like 40 degrees there.
Yeah, so you made it through. Well, love having you in studio like this. And it's such an interesting journey for both of you. I'd love to take our first segment to kind of just get into how you even got into pastoral ministry and where you are on this journey. I know, Taylor, one of the last times that you spoke from the pulpit at your church, that you talked a little bit that you didn't even grow up in the church. Mm-hmm. And so you were wearing hats in church. You're doing all kinds of all of these social no-nos in the midst of the congregation. But tell us a little bit about your journey to even why you're in ministry and where you are with it right now.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Great question. I kind of owe all of it to a mentor of mine. His name is Blaine. So in middle school and high school, he was a part of Young Life, And so my buddies and I got super involved in Young Life. And Blaine was like the first adult who at the time I thought was like 30 years older than me. But I'm now realizing he's like 9 years older than me. But he just kind of took me in and wanted to do life and was there to listen to me talk about what I was going through in high school. And I felt super safe with him just to be me. And so when I looked at him, I was like, man, there's something different about you that is just really attractive and intriguing. And it's pulling me in. Like, what do you have? Like, what's driving your life? And that's, he didn't preach it at me. He didn't tell me this is how you have to do your life. But essentially, that's where I learned, oh, man, he's been seized by the power of a great affection. And he does life with Jesus. And to me, it was just like, man, I want nothing besides that. Yeah. And that's how I got into the faith journey, I guess, up front.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty powerful voice that was even outside of your family at the time that really just demonstrated something to you beyond just words or some sort of apologetic to convince you of the kingdom. It was just a person who came alongside of you.
Yeah, it was a lot of Chipotle and golfing. So
I love that form of evangelism, Taylor.
It's my favorite, too.
I love it. Well, and Katie, thanks for joining us in studio as well this morning. I know getting through the cold like that and coming in. I'm curious for you, and you probably had a little bit more background in our faith from what I understand. I mean, I know your husband is one of the baseball coaches at Bethel University as well here locally. And for you, did you grow up in a faith environment or sort of like Taylor, did you not?
Yeah, I mean, I had a very... I had a wonderful upbringing in the Catholic Church, and my family was super engaged in it. But there came a point where I guess nobody else was engaging in it, and so I was kind of on board for doing that too. And I came across a friend who had moved into the town that I was in, this small town with one stoplight in the entire county. We got somebody new in our school. And she just sort of started inviting me into this more engaged faith. And when I look back on like this call into ministry, it is this like slow burn for me. Like I don't, it wasn't like a call. Like, oh yes, I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. So I'm going to do this thing next. And it was just that's sort of how ministry just happened. She engaged me in some faith things, and I was like, okay, I think that sounds good. And then it sort of just started like, wow. And then it sort of unfolded for me, the story of God and the fact that I could get to know him on a level that was different, not better or worse, but just different. And something that I obviously needed to like ignite or like to light a fire under me. And then I just decided like, oh, I think I'm going to just apply for one college. Actually, I applied for North Central University based solely on the fact that they only would make me take algebra as the highest math.
I think that is that demonstrates already your spiritual discernment, Katie, to recognize that algebra right. Maybe is as much as we need. I can't remember the last time I've used a parabola. Now, in saying that, if you're an engineer, I super appreciate it. I know people are waving their hands at Studio Me right now. But
we have different views. Different strokes for different folks.
I love it. Well, and I love it, just telling the story that it was a bit of a slow burn for you, sort of the sense of call. And I'd be curious. For me, in being 25 years in ministry, I've done a lot of teaching. I've done a lot of preaching over all those years. And I've experienced you as a teacher, as somebody who has more teaching ability in sort of your little pinky than I have all throughout my entire body. And yet growing up and experiencing this slow burn, this call to ministry, and as a female into that, did you get at points in the journey where you had to ask some questions about, can I even be in ministry as a woman? Or what has been some of that like for you?
Yeah. Apparently that like those questions didn't come up until much later.
Yeah.
And I feel like the environment even in the college level was I didn't worry about the female thing didn't cross my mind. And that wasn't until I sort of left that space that I realized that this is a thing. And then sort of slowly bumping into it and realizing that. That there's a wide array of people out in the evangelical church or the church in general who wouldn't even respect or they don't believe that I should have the job that I have.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's a super interesting thing to sort of rectify within myself. I think it has been a journey. But again, I cannot be more grateful for the environments and the people that I have come across that have affirmed the gifts in me and who have affirmed leadership and have affirmed pastoral things, that I just stay in that lane and am confident that, like, that God is leading me, that these gifts are valuable and useful. And I just sort of, like, don't engage a lot in the, in my own, like, mind question about, like, can I do this as a woman or not? Like, I could totally go there, but I kind of just choose not to. And I've chosen communities that also seem to not choose that kind of conversation either.
And you're a pastor. Tell me your exact title at Open Door again.
I
know they change pretty regularly.
Associate Pastor of Formational Life.
Wow, that is a fancy
title.
Boom! Yes.
Mic drop!
Miss Beasley, that is a fancy title. And Taylor, tell us your title too at Open Door.
Oh, not that. I think it's Associate Pastor of Community Life.
Okay, all right.
Question mark?
Yeah, question mark. Fair enough. And Taylor, I'd be curious, you growing up in a non-believing situation, I'm sure you had a circle of friends around you that were also non-believers. Yeah. What were some of the responses you began to explore the Christian faith and began to actually give your life to Jesus? Was there a response among your friends at that time? And did you lose some friends? Were they, like, cool with it? I know there's so much about diversity of, hey, whatever you want to do, you want to do these days. But was that your experience?
Yeah, great question. Actually, most of my friends were church-going Christians. So essentially, it's just kind of an easy on-ramp into being a part of what they have known their whole lives.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there were any that were opposed besides immediate family members.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't think of any opposition up front, but mostly it was, I mean, so I, like, growing up, I loved that I didn't go to church because I got to sleep in on Sundays.
Right.
And all my friends had to get up super early. And so my whole life, I was like, that's cool. Like, I get to sleep in. But when I came into this, it was just an easy on-ramp into a life that they have known their whole life. And I felt like I was invited into the family, essentially.
Well, I love the story of your background, the two of you, and I know we'll take a short break here when we come back. I want to get into some of what you are experiencing in ministry today. What are some of the needs of the people around you as you're doing life with people in pastoral ministry? I know it's a 24/7 responsibility. It so often feels that way to be with people. And I'm really curious because I've been with you in environments where you invited me to, of all places, a craft brewery, my wife Hallie and I both, and I thought my head exploded because I couldn't get my head around whether or not the Christian faith could actually be in this place as well. So I'm going to need the two of you to sort some things out for me next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at just about 21 minutes after the top of the hour. And we're joined in studio by a couple of local pastors as part of the Next Generation, Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley. And it's been so fun for me to teach in a Christian ministries program at a place like Northwestern and at Bethel and see some just visual realities of the hope of the future that God's kingdom will remain. Even though I think I just recently passed my 150th birthday is what it feels like to me, and past Bilbo Baggins at this point, knowing that the two of you and others like you continue this incredible journey. And we talk often on Faith Radio Mornings, Rachel Sutton, about just how troubling events can be in our country. And I think there's so much anxiety that gets created about so many of these things. And so it's really helpful to me to see that our allegiance can really be given to a kingdom that knows no end. And it doesn't mean we don't participate in the realities of our country and are even grateful for our country and do all the protection. All of those things are very true. And yet when I'm with people like the two of you, I know that this crazy journey that started 2,000 years ago and that tomb was empty is continuing even today. So glad that you in studio to talk about some of what you see in the next generation for people in my generation, knowing this will continue. And Katie, I'm not sure what your life is like with friends and when you're ministering to people. I know for me growing up, faith was very much defined by a pretty conservative series of behaviors, not necessarily bad, but absolutely we shouldn't be seeing R-rated movies. There was a hair length that when I had hair that we were expected to have and wouldn't touch our shoulders, earrings, tattoos, playing cards, all of these things. I mean, they were anathema. There are no way that people should do that sort of thing. What are you seeing in your generation related to some of these kinds of topics in terms of tattoos and earrings and all of that? I mean, how are people navigating this conversation?
Oh, great question.
Good start.
Man, when you phrase it like that, my mind went blank. So I think that, you know, I'm considered a millennial.
Yeah.
I am the oldest version of millennial.
The senior millennial.
Senior millennial.
Yeah.
And I when I was in college, so this is 99 to 2004, a lot of those, like I experienced that a lot of those things still in play.
Yeah.
So this is, we're only talking, you know, less than 10 years. And I'm significantly younger than you.
Thanks a lot, Katie.
Yeah. So it does not feel like it's that far away. Like, I don't feel like I'm dipping into the past with some of these rules and regulations and look this certain way and act like this. And I think that for me and my experience with that, that was just an entire way for me to sort of stuff who I really was. And like, if I could do the behavior management, then I would be totally fine. And I spent many years doing that. And I think that people that my age, I think that we have a long history of behavior management. And I don't think that, I think it's done a lot of damage to who we are, and we don't really know what to do with who we are. And so we keep running the rat race. And I think my generation probably is on that big time. And the one that's a little bit in front of me. Is that we're all sort of like trying to figure out behavior management while our, is it Richard Rohr that talks about building the castles and that you spend the first half of your life building the castles and then the second half of your life just destroying them.
Right.
And like the behavior management thing works when you're trying to build the castle, but like in the second half of life when life is basically just ripping it to shreds, like the behavior management just doesn't work. And so I think that's where the anxiety is created. I think that's where, like, what do you do with this then? Like, I don't even know how to be myself. Like, and then there's all kinds of weird messages out there with the culture about like, take care of yourself. And there seems to be a large disconnect. And I feel like that's what I would say is the ramifications of what my generation is struggling with.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I love that phrase, behavior management. And it doesn't mean that our behavior doesn't matter. It does. But I love the work that you do in something like formation, where we're actually being invited to be formed from the inside out. That is, our character is formed in a way that is consistent with who Jesus is. Our behavior begins to naturally flow from that place.
Right.
Our desires and our passions are ordered from those places, as opposed to, I know how tired I used to get trying to manage my behavior for 15 hours. And then I would go to sleep and the anxiety would spin because it felt like just some sort of game that I was playing all morning long. And I know, Taylor, for you, one of these places where I experienced sort of the exploding of my behavior management was a time in which you were doing a gig because you're a musician as well. In terms of, it's Family 3 is the name of your...
That is correct.
Yeah, so you drive me nuts because you're incredibly capable in the pulpit. You're good-looking, charming, dashing. You can sing, all of these sorts of things, Taylor. So you're causing me to stumble just by being here this morning with jealousy.
I'm sorry.
I do appreciate that. And maybe Katie can sort out that image of Jesus stuff inside of me later.
Podcast.
But I know for you, Taylor, we were at a craft brewery. But I mean, a craft beer is obviously a big thing in our culture. And you had a gig. You had a time at a craft brewery. And we came. And Hallie and I, my wife, my head just about exploded in the sense of who was all present. I mean, you want to talk about the highways and the byways of the scriptural text. You want to talk about the least and the lost, the people on the fringes, people who wouldn't have felt maybe invited into the faith at any level. They were all there. And it was just I didn't know what to do with all of it, given such a conservative understanding of the faith that I had growing up.
Yeah, man, I might be leading into what other questions you have, but that, if you want to talk about the future of the church I love the church building, and I love that we have a space that we can go to and come together as believers. We can invite people to that. That will always hold value. But I think now in this upcoming generation, more and more is longing to see the church outside of the church building. And even in places like a pub or a brewery. And to me, that hits on the idea that God came down to be with us. And through the death and resurrection of Jesus, he chose to dwell inside of us. Which if that's the truth, then that means wherever we go, God is coming with us. So no longer is doing life with God just reserved for the temple, the church, the building. It's an invitation to all of us that, man, everywhere we go, the people we meet on the street or in the coffee shop or at the grocery store, it's always an opportunity to do God's kingdom life and to be the church instead of just going to the church. And that's what the pub style brewery type places means to us. That's actually a lot of times that's where we do church.
Yeah, I'm mindful of if we ask the question, where might Jesus go if he incarnated again right now in the present day? And I'm just guessing, as much as it's, again, a conflict with maybe how I grew up in some ways, that that's probably where he'd be, ministering in spirit. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of the church is actually the people, right? When it says that you are a temple of the Holy Spirit, it is the collective you that are indwelt with the Spirit is the church. It's not just a building with a steeple and a sign. Well, it's Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley, some of the next generation pastors here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. We're going to take a break for Breakpoint and some news at the bottom of the hour. When we come back for the second half, we'll continue this conversation. And if you have some thoughts or questions that you would like to share about this conversation, you can go ahead and text the studio or call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. More to come with Taylor and Katie next on Faith Radio Mornings. Give a shout out this morning to the Minneapolis Police Department, but also to the police all over the Midwest and all over our country that are spending quite a bit of time getting cold weather gear out to people who are homeless, providing for people in need. I know in Minneapolis, officers were out yesterday providing hats and gloves and blankets to those in need, offering shelter options as well. They're pairing themselves with homeless advocates to help prevent people from getting frostbite, which can set on exposed skin within 5 minutes at the current wind chill. So to all of the police out there and our listening audience all over the Midwest and our country, our prayers are with you this morning from Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and she was talking about the importance of giving your children chores in order to develop a healthy work ethic later in life.
Chore is something that contributes to the home. That's his responsibility, is to make his bed, but that's not necessarily a chore. What's his chore? And I really get very little for an answer at the first time I bring this up, which I think translates to most of our society is not setting chores for their children. I tell them, set a chore for each child, and some of them need to be things that they do together. They need to be age appropriate, but you need to check on them. So you go back and you look at how your child did the chore, and then you praise them or you tell them we could do this better in these ways, or you didn't do them at all, and then there's a consequence to that. But we don't have that today, and so we're not building up our kids to have a good work ethic and to realize that they're part of a team. And so that's where the teamwork comes in. We all have our responsibilities, and you guys really have to make sure that we get it all done.
Dr. Stein was so helpful yesterday, just thinking through ways in which we can invite our kids to daily responsibilities. That's actually fun and promising and sets a foundation for the future. So if you want to catch all of what she had to say on yesterday's show, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for The Morning Show and hear her 15 minutes of advice for us as parents and grandparents with our kids. We'll take a short break and we'll continue the conversation with some of my young pastor friends, Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley, here in studio this morning, thinking about the next generation of ministry and what we can anticipate as God's kingdom moves ever forward.
No matter how much we want to believe it, we aren't perfect. Dad, you're not Superman. Mom, you're not Wonder Woman. Are you ready to admit your weakness? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Your teens already know you're not perfect. But when you're finally upfront about your faults, you'll actually begin to build your relationship. Your son and daughter are daily surrounded by voices that tell them they don't measure up. And when you get on his or her level and admit your own imperfection, you're doing two things. First, you're helping your teen feel comfortable in his own skin. And second, you're teaching him to have a confident but realistic assessment of himself. Being imperfect is okay, and it doesn't hurt to admit it.
Parenting teens isn't for the faint of heart. Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's about 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on the 30th of January and a frigid morning all around our country. And it's Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting with pastoral friends Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley, who work at Church of the Open Door, a church here just northwest of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and talking about some of the issues facing the next generation and what pastoral ministry might look like into the future. And Katie, what I appreciate about the two of you in terms of how you go about this, the ministry, is that you're carving out a middle road here where I experience the two of you as staying anchored to the biblical text. You really see it as authoritative and inspired, and you have an appreciation for so much of the rootedness and anchoring of our faith. And yet alongside of that, you're suggesting that it's time to maybe head outside of the church walls as well and help people in need. And it feels like in our country so often, it's sort of one or the other. We bunker down with the historical values and sort of close the doors, or we compromise all of the historical values and head outside of the church. And I experience the two of you as holding the tension of both. I mean, it's part of the wrestling match these days, isn't it?
Yes. And funny thing is, I think Taylor and I see the world quite differently.
Yes, you do.
And so I am not, it's funny, I am not as much outside of the walls. Like there is a part of me that, and yes, staying tethered to the scriptures and this faith is so vitally important for me. but I feel very like I want to figure out how the church is moving forward. And I do, what Phyllis Tickle says, that every 500 years, the church goes through a rummage sale. And it's like, what needs to stay? What needs to go? And what do we need to keep? And what do we need to, like, you know, resurrect again? What needs to, come to life? And I feel super like committed to that, like that the church has a purpose, that it exists. Sometimes it is very confusing why it seems like it's God's design to have worked through a church, through the church. And I do mean that in and outside the walls, like this big C and this, like this collective voice. But I feel super, I feel more called to like the internal workings of the church to make sure that she like can move and is able to navigate this next phase. And not that, negates the fact that I like outside of the walls, but I feel compelled to like kind of stand on the foundation and like help it shift, you know, but remain grounded.
Yeah, I mean, we need to have a healthy home base of relationships in which we're connected and we stay with each other on this journey, and common preaching, common language, common worship, all of these things. To have a healthy environment is what actually enables us to go outside of the walls.
Yes, but it has to change. I mean, we are operating on an old system, and I just think that feels like the challenge of this time, that we are at that kind of 500-year mark, and it's time to sort of say, okay, let's be really brutally honest about this. What needs to go and what has to stay? And I really want to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, because God's kingdom will remain, as we talk about over and over and over again in Faith Radio Mornings, but the expressions of it do shift. And as a student of history, as you are referencing what Phyllis Tickle has talked about, we see those shifts, and it doesn't mean that it compromises the kingdom, but it does mean some of the expressions and some of the, maybe the patterns that we've gotten into that aren't always terribly healthy in the way we operate sometimes as a business, as a church, or some of these different ideas. These things do need to shift over time.
Yeah, and I think that's the way of God, is to continue to expand and to continue to like be larger than we imagined. And so if we can at points just say like, all right, something neat, like let's look at her again and let's see if she needs to shift. And I think that it's such an incredible, fun time to be a part of a church right now. And something's just got to go. But I just feel really committed to her. And I don't, and again, that's that slow burn. I kind of don't know why, because I think the church is like a beast. And it is a place of confusion and where you bump up against each other. I mean, it is just this odd place. But I maybe not forever, but for now, it's just this is what I feel desperately called to.
And Taylor, I know when we talk in these sort of terms, one of the things I really appreciate about you is that there can be splits generationally, and generations can begin to sort of become skeptical and cynical of each other and dismissive of each other, older to younger, younger to older. But every time I hear you talk and talk about community, it's about bringing us all together in this journey. And that is so important if we're going to carve out a way forward into the future, as Katie is suggesting.
Matt, it's the coolest part of the church. ever since, I'll reference back to Blaine, the guy that invited me into this entire thing. I've had probably over 100 men that I've done life with that are twice my age.
Yeah.
And even now today, one of my very best friends is almost 70 years old, and I spend every week with him. And it's fascinating because he has twice the life experience that I have, but we're in the same exact things. So there's this like physical separation where I feel like generationally, or even just our bodies, like they're trying to stay in where they're housed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 32, he's 69. That means different things. But then when you come at it spiritually and even just socially, like how you connect and how you understand each other and how you share and you're vulnerable, that's all on the exact same page. So it just makes me wonder, like, are we going to miss it if we just stick to our generation, the people that look and talk and do life just like I do? Are we going to miss out on an invitation from God to really experience the fullness of life? And I would guess yes is the answer.
Yeah, no, I love that, Harpy. I mean, we're such a tapestry that's woven together in God's kingdom, and it's all generations coming together, not dismissive of one another. So I love that heart. Taylor, we'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll get into some more things that you see for the future, and when you talk about the beauty of the church as it exists and some of the challenges and how we can carve out the realities for us as we keep moving this great kingdom forward. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. Here at about 9 minutes before the top of the hour, we have one last segment with our friends Taylor Bongard and Katie Beasley, who are part of a next generation of pastoral ministry in our city, representative, I know, of so many young pastors in the Midwest and around our country that are staying anchored and tethered to the historical truths of our faith while also figuring out what life looks like for the next generation. And Katie, during the break, you're referencing that you had some thoughts just around what it means to be a millennial and to be ministering and talking with millennials. So share with our listeners a bit about what's sort of rolling around in that.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to be an expert. I'm just speaking from my own experience. And as a senior millennial, I have recently started working with young adults at our church, and some presuppositions of what I thought millennials were like. And it has been fascinating. And I think one of the biggest challenges for me, and what I hope people but what I hope we can figure out, is that I think even in you know, at the end of this generation or whatever, and I might be part of another one. I don't know what the one is ahead of me.
I don't either. XYZ, double A. I never know for sure.
We used to have to earn our voice. You know, we used to have to work for it. We used to have some sort of thing that made you valuable or worthwhile for listening to. Well, that's not the case anymore. So there is a very huge discrepancy about voice And what I have experienced is I was like, wow, these younger people have such a voice. They weigh in. They weigh in hard on social issues. They weigh in hard on but what I found, like, after I sort of pushed past the, oh, they have a voice, like they are a force to be reckoned with, after pushing past that and just scratching the surface, it's like, oh my, they are not developed. They are not ready. I think we are assuming things in leadership on them based on the fact that they have a voice, quote unquote, a voice. But I think our big challenge is we all have to just, like, push past and invite them to the table. And we have to, we just have to figure out how to develop these young people who the cart went before the horse, and they have a voice, yeah, and they have a platform. And it's a really out of balance thing. And so that's my struggle that I have sort of found and didn't know that was the case. But realizing that, they need a lot of help. So that would just be my challenge, is like, sure, I don't know what to do with millennials and whatever. I don't, like, land in the camp of like, oh, what do we do with them? Mm-hmm. We treat them like every other generation. They just happen to have a voice, and we got to figure out how to develop underneath that so that the voice is actually matched with some maturity and some care and some love and some understanding. And so that's been interesting.
That's a powerful word, Katie, and so true. I mean, we're given what's considered credible and authoritative in our country these days is that which is viral, and it's often not developed. And so to have some development to come around, not dismiss, but to just come around and do that, it's a powerful word. And Taylor, I know for you, as you're thinking about where we are as a country and the division and polarization, there's some things that really are sort of germinating inside of you about that as well.
Sure. Man, everything is expressing itself in polarization, it feels like, these days, and maybe forever. But I feel like the church has one of the coolest opportunities right now, not to correct the polarization or to say this is the right way, this is the wrong way, you're in, you're out. But can the church be a place where we can bring who we are, what we're dealing with, our struggles, our disappointments, our shame? Can we bring that and be vulnerable enough with each other to understand that we're going to have differences, but then to learn how to love each other in those differences and to have these safe conversations within the church? And this is maybe getting back to the church building itself. That can be a safe place to bring this and to see each other and to say, man, we are so different and I disagree with you, but that doesn't change that I love you. And that's my call as a follower of Jesus, is to show you and express God's love to you. And I just wonder, man, if we don't do it in the church, is it ever going to happen anywhere else? I don't know if there's a safe environment for that to take place. So this polarization that we experience every day, 24 hours a day, let's bring that into the church, and let's just be open with, hey, what do we do with that? And let's do that together.
I think one of the things in my run as Faith Radio Morning's host has just been how often the headlines are so troubling. And I've come to a similar conclusion as the two of you, that if we're not a church that's shining the light on the hill, as Jesus talks about, I don't know where that light is going to come from otherwise. So incredibly grateful for the two of you. Very grateful for what you're stepping into. Even though I'm 150 years old, I would gladly let the two of you shepherd me into the future. I'm sure Katie Beasley and my wife Hallie would agree that I probably have a little bit of development to go as well. Hallie's been a silent listener all morning. She's been in studio here on my second to last day on Faith Radio Mornings. She nodded her head in agreement. So our prayers are with the two of you, with your generation, with people all over our Midwest and all over our country that are carrying this beautiful kingdom forward. So thanks for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings.
Thank you.
We will take a break here and wrap up our show for the frigid 30th of January. Well, enjoyable time with Katie and Taylor in studio. Enjoyable time with all of you texting in temperatures from around the Midwest. I know we've talked about the weather quite a bit today, but for good reason. It's historic stuff that's happening. And we ended hour one with what was called the Minnesota Doxology. I've never heard this before, but it really gave us a chuckle of delight, and some listeners asked to play it again. So we're going to wrap up our show here today for Faith Radio Mornings with the Minnesota Doxology.
Praise God, from whom all blizzards flow. Praise Him at 35 below. Praise Him in snowdrifts 10 feet deep. Praise Him, though winter makes us weep. It's really cold.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.